In telling the story of Congo, we often depict it as a dark place tainted by war and corruption. But today we are here to tell the story of communities in Eastern Congo and their strength found in the hope of their faith in healing and reconciliation. My name is Jamie Cloninger with Raise Hope for Congo of the Enough Project. Over the next few minutes, we'll be exploring the role of faith communities in Eastern Congo and how they serve to hold together the social fabric of communities. Here with me is Jacques Bahati of Africa Faith and Justice Network, originally from Goma in Eastern Congo, and Aaron Hall of the Enough Project. Let's start off with you, Bahati. Why don't you tell us a bit more about yourself and the role faith communities have played in your personal story to bringing you to work at Africa Faith and Justice Network?
Thank you, Jamie. Growing up in Congo as a child born in a Catholic family, faith has always been center to our lives. I even made it to seminary for about 10 years. Indeed, that has an impact on what I do today. That's why I am with the Africa Faith and Justice Network, a Catholic organization that is focused on advocacy.
Now, Bahati, almost 96% of the Congolese population affiliates with the Christian faith. What has been the main role of the Christian faith in Congo?
The faith has been the only institution that has provided a lot of social and economic services to the people where the state has abandoned those tasks. So the church has taken on more than its share to bringing to addressing some of the crises and the needs of the people.
And in following up on that and how the faith community does, you know, is so ingrained in the local communities, could you explain a little bit more on how the local church has, you know, taken on the responsibility of supporting local hospitals and schools all throughout the country? And can you share with us a bit more on their role and their function in the local communities?
Jamie, the missionaries, when they arrived in Congo, the Catholic missionaries or Protestant missionaries, they saw the need for education, for healthcare, among other things. And they have been running those schools, indeed raising up one of our best leaders and investing in healthcare in a country where practically those infrastructures are non-existent in many places. So they are present in the most remote areas of the country. And so that is evidence of the church implementing the social justice aspect enshrined in the gospel of Jesus Christ. So there is no one who can dispute that the church has been one of the most efficient institutions in providing services to the people.
We've also seen how faith communities in Congo have been at the heart of local grassroots efforts on everything from addressing hunger and poverty to local reconciliation efforts. How are faith communities able to be such an integral part of social reform in Congo?
Jimmy, we have more than one names we can bring forward in answering that question. For example, in the diocese of Bukavu, we can name Archbishop Munzihirwa, who died because he stood up as a prophet in the midst of a challenge of an attack against the people. His predecessor, his successor, Bishop Kataliko, was exiled into his village as he continued the mission to stand up and defend the people. So The church has been a symbol, a sacrament of encouragement, and the function, it's not only the word of God, but also the witness. It's very strong, and it's not only the Catholic Church, but other churches, other denominations.
Now we'll turn to you, Aaron, and in your policy and advocacy work on the conflict, how have you been able to collaborate and work with the Catholic and Protestant churches in Eastern Congo?
Yeah, thanks, Jamie. First of all, it's absolutely critical to work with these groups to have any real effect in working on these issues, both in Congo and here in the United States. Working and collaborating with the faith-based community in Eastern Congo is critical to understanding and connecting culturally with the Congolese people, and being able to have that credibility both in Congo and the U.S. To move forward advocacy agendas on human rights and peace building in Congo. We work with faith-based leaders both on the ground in Congo, here in Washington, Bahati, for instance, on a number of issues, and you know, the issues that we continually work to achieve, and those of the faith-based community that are trying to achieve in Congo, you know, are oftentimes in line based on the human rights agenda. And we've worked with a number of leaders on the Hill, doing advocacy to members of Congress, testifying in front of the Hill, taking meetings with the administration, and you know, working with these individuals brings so much gravitas to the conversation and so much credibility from the field based on the power and the vastness of their network in Congo.
Aaron, you just touched on this, and recently Bishop Jomo, the current chairman of the National Conference of Bishops in the DRC, flew in to testify before Congress on the issue of conflict minerals, stating that the church is everywhere the people are, including the mines. Bahati and Aaron, you both have recently traveled to a few mines in the Kivus, and in what ways is the church able to address the conflict in the mining areas?
Jamie, I just returned from Congo in February, and we visited the gold mine of Mukera. This is in the territory of Fizi in South Kivu. The church has been addressing the issue of conflict mineral from the time the war started in Congo, because they believe this war was beyond the rhetoric of armed group and so on, but it was a war, an economic war. So we have seen the bishops of Congo and other and pastors from Christian denominations and Muslims join voices, going to the UN, coming to the US, going to Europe, speaking to the international community about the plundering of the Congolese resources, and underscoring the fact that there is a need to stop that trade that is bloody, but create partnership for those with those who need those resources, particularly ending the financial network that is allowing the rebel groups to finance their wars. So the church has been in the midst of this, as the state also continues to address the issue of peace and justice in Congo.
And again, you know, the church is so entrenched in these communities, these mining communities, that oftentimes, from an external perspective, when trying to get information from these communities, facts can become muddied, as people are maybe fearful for their own security to talk to you about certain issues at the mines, or people that have a vested interest in the mining interest have, you know, the same interest in giving you misinformation about facts on the ground. But the church's agenda on the ground is often to help those communities in which they exist. And so they understand the issues that communities face there. They understand the conditions at the mines, what's happening to women, what's happening to children. And it's in their interest to communicate with those people that come looking for that information with the broader agenda of sharing with a global community in order to enact change. And so their presence and their network throughout these communities is an integral part of being able to, you know, separate myth from fact and shed some light on the situations that exist on the ground.
I'll direct this question to both of you. Talk to us a little bit about the role the Catholic Church played in last year's national presidential elections.
They have they invested money and resources in personnel and deployed 30,000 election monitors. That is something that has no match as far as really participation. And the single message is that the people's voice needed to be heard and somebody needed to be watching, because we know it's not Congo only. The trend of rigging elections is there, and that is a concern. And the church did its part. Unfortunately, things did not turn out the way people thought. The dispute rose after the elections, and the church continues to believe that although the voices of the people were not heard, next time they will do the same and even more.
Yeah, you know, the elections last year in Congo, the national presidential elections, were marred by irregularities and fraud. It was a really unfortunate situation that was occurring that expanded or that extended from the year before the election to the run-up to the elections in November and continues to this day. In the wake of the elections that saw the presidential majority take power once again, to many was a questionable outcome, there was a tremendous amount of infighting amongst the political opposition parties and civil society groups. There was also a tremendous amount of repression of opposition voices, and oftentimes it took shape as violent oppression of those voices. And the people of Congo that felt that there had been injustice done in the election process were unable to come together to galvanize a coordinated mass movement across the country, which is, as you all know, is a massive space, to mount any kind of tangible opposition against the process and against the ruling majority. The only group that was really able to coordinate and mobilize, from the western borders to the eastern borders of Congo and everywhere in between was the Catholic Church. And not only that, the only credible voice coming out of the country that NGOs working on democracy and governance issues or human rights issues or donor governments or stakeholder governments that contribute money and aid to Congo, the only voice that was really being listened to at that time was the voice coming out of the Catholic Church and those of the bishops. And so more so than any political party, more so than any civil society group, the Catholic Church was able to speak for the Congolese people and continues to do so to this day. As we move forward in this electoral process that really isn't over, and in fact will probably continue through this next year. So, without the Catholic Church, the situation could have been so much worse. And really, they are the one real mechanism at this point for which the Congolese people can get their voice out in terms of demanding justice and accountability in the democratic process in Congo.
I'd like to add to what you just said, Aaron, that the church, the Catholic Church, and many other denominations have been at the table as a neutral voice. And that is what we need. When people, we saw the ruling party gun down, many people as they tried to cling on power. The church denounced those killings, and so as a neutral voice, we need more of that kind of voice to bring order and stand up for democracy and give everyone space for expression.
Thank you both for joining us today and sharing your experiences of working with faith communities and the value of their role in Eastern Congo and the ways that the faith communities here in the United States can support those efforts. To find out more information about how local faith communities here in the U.S. can support those efforts in Eastern Congo, please visit our website at www.raisehopeforcongo.org. And to find out more information about Africa Faith and Justice Network and the great work that Bahati is doing with his team, visit www.afjn.org.